And welcome to Food for Thought. I'm Dee Anderson.
And I'm Laura Mangone.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, hey. Good morning, America. It's like a blizzard outside.
Yes.
No snow yet, but lots of wind, whipping wind. And we're supposed to get, I think we're supposed to get like 10 inches on Monday.
Oh, gosh. When?
Monday. Like this whole blizzard that's coming across the country. They literally said 6 to 8 feet of snow in parts of Northern California.
Oh, my God.
That's taller than us.
Wow. Yeah. Do you know about when the snow is supposed to start?
Monday. Yes. Monday.
Like Monday morning?
Like Monday mid-morning, I think.
Okay.
And it's supposed to go until, actually it's supposed to still snow on Tuesday, but the accumulations, which in my area are like 6 to 10 inches, 8 to 10 inches, something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I might have the day.
No,
off
I'm wrong. I'm sorry. 6 to 8 inches. Yeah. So we have that to look forward to. Happy winter.
I don't, you know, mind it as long as my nanny client is okay and they can, you know, they're very good about not making me, you know, they don't want me on the roads or trying to brave it so that I can get 3 hours in or whatever. And I just feel, I love them so much. I feel badly if I don't wind up coming and then they pay me anyway, because that's what they did last snow day.
Right.
So, you know, it's like they're giving me personal days to boot. And nice. So they're just great. So I don't mind. I mean, snow days are fun, and especially when you live in a townhouse and they take care of everything.
Yeah, that's not that's not the case here at Casa Mangone.
Casa Mangone's gonna do it herself. But although, pre-salt the steps and everything.
Although I do love it, I really do. I mean, it's great exercise.
It is good exercise.
I do generally, like today bothers me more than a day. Like when it's just cold.
Yeah.
I'm not fond of cold, but if it's snowing, then I don't mind the cold because then I get bundled up and I'm outside and I'm walking and I'm, you know.
Right.
It's good.
It was never my favorite thing to do, but it wasn't the worst thing in the world. You know, I did also look at it as like an upper body workout. So.
Absolutely. And now that it's going to make my walking, so as you know, I'm recuperating from hip surgery. Let me say, today's Friday. I think I'm 6 weeks today. And I've been going to physical therapy. We will get to, just to let our listeners know, we will get to food eventually.
Yes. Okay, so I have to be like this. Yes.
So my physical therapist just told me, cause I've been feeling a lot better. So I'm feeling, you know, like I want to start doing things, being a little bit more active. I mean, I've been exercising like a crazy person. I'm like 3 times a day. I'm walking, I'm doing exercises, I'm icing, I'm on a pretty rigid schedule as far as that goes. But, you know, I always want to do more. He told me that weeks 6 through 10 are the most crucial in this recovery, because it's when you start to feel better and you want to do more, and that's when you hurt yourself and you know, tweak something or move the wrong way. So I've really got to take it easy. And he just gave me the go ahead because I've been walking outside and it's been cold. Like I've been getting bundled up. It's been very cold. 3 times a day I go for a walk. I'm getting like 5,000 to 6,000 steps a day, which is, you know, pretty good for someone who's convalescing. So he just told me I could go on the treadmill, which I was so thankful for because I love the treadmill. I put a movie on or I listen to my an audiobook. I can't, here's the catch. I can't do more than 2.5 miles per hour. So I'm basically walking slowly, much slower than if I were outside walking.
Right.
It's pretty funny. It's like I feel like I'm a slow motion movie happening.
Right.
So, okay, let's get to some food. So, I recently watched a documentary, and it's from last year. It's not current by any means. when Mario and I go into the city to see Uncle Joe, it's become our habit that we listen to podcasts of Fresh Air. So with Terry Gross, we listen to, you know, I go through the whole lineup and I
NPR.
See what it is, and we listen to a couple.
Fresh Air on NPR?
On NPR. It's a fabulous talk show, interview show.
Love NPR.
Love. And
love NPR.
You know, she has the most, I mean, I could literally listen to Terry Gross 24/7. Her voice is like honey, you know.
I'm sure I know. I don't know the name, you know, I don't know the name. I'm sure once I heard her voice, I would.
I think if you heard her voice, you were totally. Yeah, she just has a very soothing, quiet, her words are well-paced. It's a very relaxing podcast. Anyway, this week, or not this week, we listened to this week a podcast from last year, and it is about a documentary about a South African, he's a wildlife photographer, and he lives on the coast of South Africa, and he was going through just sort of having a burnout with his job and feeling, you know, sort of low with his family. And he decided, you know, sometimes if you get into a routine of doing things, whether it's painting or you're going for a walk every day or some sort of regime, it, you know, psychologically helps you. So he started every day, he would go free diving in the ocean right off his, you know, near where he lives. And I mean, there's a bunch of interesting parts about it. Number one, he would never wear a wetsuit. So the temperatures were, you know, granted in the summertime, it wasn't horrible, but in the cold, it was like 20 degrees, 30 degrees, 40 degrees. So no wetsuit and free diving, which means he's not using a scuba tank or anything. He's coming up to the surface, getting breath of air and going down.
I'm getting agita just thinking about it.
You have to watch it. It's very interesting. So in the course of doing this, and he said that he was going to do this for a year. And now, since this documentary was done, produced a couple of years ago, he's been doing it like literally for like 3 years. Every day he goes in and he has just started exploring. And obviously he's a wildlife photographer. So taking the most beautiful photographs, just visually, this documentary is amazing. And the name of the documentary is My Octopus Teacher. Because in his observations of the kelp forests and the areas that he would go, he came upon this octopus. And every day he would visit her. And he literally formed a relationship with this octopus. I mean, octopus are really, really smart. I never knew how smart they are. And just it goes through, you know, the beginnings of their relationship and her being tentative. And you can see she's sort of peeking out from her den a little bit, and then eventually it gets to the point where she comes out and like plays with him and you know, sits on him, and they really, you see this relationship being formed. And I don't know if you know, but an octopus has a very short lifespan. A Pacific octopus only lives like 3 to 5 years, but in his part of the world, they only sometimes live a year. So once they lay their eggs, after they've spawned, they die. So he basically was part of this octopus's life for about 80% of her life. And it's just fascinating. I mean, just the tactics that she uses for camouflage, you know, he's seeing her with predators and evading predators and her relationship with other things in the sea, and it's amazing. I'm telling you, amazing.
Well,
so I think
I don't know if I want to see it, Laura.
Well,
I don't want to not eat. I don't eat enough octopus to support the.
I have to be honest. I thought that initially. I mean, I have been eating octopus as far as I can remember. My father used to grill it in the backyard. I mean, I've been eating it my whole life, and I love it. And as you and I have experienced, you know, all the different ways of preparation dependent on the cuisine, whether it's braised, whether it's, you know, we've talked about it on the show often.
Right.
I think about, like, so I also think a cow is kind of cute and I like cows, but I still eat beef.
Right.
You know,
I wonder why, I wonder.
This may not last, but they are very, very smart mammals. Cephalopods, actually.
Cephalopods, like, yeah.
They're a cephalopod.
Yeah, I know. That's an interesting comparison. Like you say, you know, you were saying to yourself that it might not, it might affect the way you, whether you eat octopus again.
Right.
Yet I do think, I think cows are cute and cuddly, yeah. But I eat meat.
I eat them.
And,
you know.
Yeah, I struggle with that a little
lamb.
Bit.
I eat lamb. I mean, what's cuter than a cute
lamb? I know, I know. I struggle with it a little bit, but only in the, to the point that I'm sort of interested in understanding the decision to just, you know, because, you know, I talk a lot about vegan
right.
cooking now because it's my one client. That's all I do is right. vegan stuff. But I'm not sure I could ever make that decision to just
yeah,
not.
Yeah, I don't know that I could either, but certainly, you know, in the aftermath of watching this documentary, it certainly did affect me a little bit. You know, I've always known that creatures are, you know, smart and have brains and, you know, interact with one another. And anywho, it was very interesting. It's called My Octopus Teacher, and I highly recommend it if anyone's looking for just, I mean, it's like, it could be like a sedative, only the photography and the music. It's just really beautiful, just visually so gorgeous.
To be sort of visually stunning and also fascinating content at the same time. You know, that's kind of a nice.
Yeah,
I might wanna. Try,
I mean, there's a couple of she at one point. He never names her, but he does call her a she. It is a female. You know, at one point she gets kind of attacked by a shark. And one of her limbs is taken, but then, ooh. You know, they regenerate their limbs. So he uh-huh. documenting the process of, like, all of a sudden you see this little teeny another arm growing, and then it's,
wow.
She's, you know, like limping along, and it's just fascinating. I don't know why I'm so.
Yeah. And I wonder whether there's
amazed.
Are people out there researching that phenomenon of, you know, I had actually did not know that they regrow their
limbs.
I wonder in that process for science whether that could be, you know,
I'm sure
somebody's on it, right? Somebody's on that one.
I'm sure. Absolutely. I mean, just the sheer amazement of nature was, you know, amazing. So anyway, back to a little bit of food. This week I made something really delicious. I had an accumulation, to be honest, it was sparked because I needed to change the water filter in my refrigerator.
Okay.
And in order to change the water filter, you know where yours is, right? Remember? I looked
yeah.
at yours when you first moved in. So where ours is located is on the back of the top shelf, and that top shelf, I have a ton of, not so much, some condiments. I mean, I have a lot of condiments on the doors, but olives and sun-dried tomatoes and, you know, things that I've used, maybe relishes, pickles, jellies, jams, those sort of things are on that top shelf. And I needed to take everything out in order to change the filter.
Uh-huh.
So as I have it all out on the counter, I'm like, all right, I should use up some of this stuff. You know, some of this stuff has been here for quite some time. And although they are preserved, whether it's oil or vinegar. So I decided to do a braise. And rather than my usual go-to chicken thighs, which when I was running through the grocery store on Tuesday morning, I could not, every chicken thigh was boneless, skinless.
I hate that.
I hate that too. And I wanted bones and I didn't feel like bugging the guy who was restocking the shelf. I just wanted to grab something and go. So I bought some turkey thighs. And I just needed two little packages. It was like $4 or $5 for each package.
Now, let me just interrupt. I've never I don't recall ever seeing turkey thighs for sale.
I don't know that I've ever really, I've known they're there, but I just usually whiz by them. But they're, you know, they were massive, as you
How
know.
Big?
A turkey thigh is huge.
How big?
Pretty big. I think the package was probably, it was probably like, I want to say 8 to 9 ounces each.
Okay.
So basically a pound. There were two thighs in the package, and I bought two of them. So I had four pretty hefty, you know, certainly as big as my palm, as big as my right. hand.
Right.
And I seared them because I was going to do it in the crock pot. And as you know, we've gone over in the past different methods of, you know, do you sear it? Do you not sear it? Do you just put it in? I seared them really quickly. I threw them in the crock pot. I had some spicy Italian turkey sausage the day before, and I had the pan that I had roasted the sausage in, so I deglazed that. I threw that juice in. I threw in some olives. I threw in some mushrooms. I threw in some sun-dried tomatoes. Basically, you know, all of these half containers of what things you would find on an olive bar, you know, sun-dried tomatoes, olives.
Right.
I threw some right. capers, and I didn't even put any broth in it. I put a little bit of tomato paste in it, and I put a couple of sprigs of rosemary in it and braised it, and it was freaking delicious.
Okay.
So I served it over whole wheat pasta because there was a lot of juice and it was delicious.
What was the braising liquid?
I didn't have one. Hold on. On that note, I'll finish that when we come back. We just ran out of time.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Are you over the age of 60 and been diagnosed with lung cancer? If so, you and your family may qualify for a cash award. Our experienced attorneys are standing by to evaluate whether you have a lung cancer claim that qualifies you for a cash award. The consultation is absolutely free, and there is no risk and no money out of pocket. We only receive a fee when we secure you and your family a settlement. 250,000 people are diagnosed with lung cancer every year. You're not alone in this battle. We can help make sure that you and your family are financially safe and that medical expenses are covered. Again, if you've been diagnosed with lung cancer and are over age 60, call now. Don't delay. There are deadlines for filing claims. We're standing by 24/7. Call us at 1-855-398-1754. 1-855-398-1754. That's 1-855-398-1754. Attorney Advertising. William Stephacker Jr. is the attorney responsible for this ad. Main office, Granton, Pennsylvania. May not be available in all states.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Generic Sildenafil allows you to save up to $650 on Viagra. Why pay name brand prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get the same results for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 50 generic Sildenafil pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $750 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill for the name brand again. Get generic Sildenafil for less than $3 a pill. Call 800-590-0443 today and save up to $650 and get 50 pills for just $99. Generic Sildenafil is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting to take your call now. Call 800-590-0443. That's 800-590-0443. Again, 800-590-0443.
Okay, so we're back. And just to recap, we were running up against the clock there, so I was rushing through it. So a couple of days before, I had roasted some spicy Italian turkey sausage. And I had done it in a casserole dish, which I had the fond that was still at the bottom of it from roasting. Mm-hmm. So I deglazed that. So that was part of the broth that I put in with the turkey thighs.
Oh, so there was some broth.
There's a little, just that, you know, just deglazing. It was like a half a cup of water, basically, just to scrape up the remnants of the spicy Italian sausage. So
yeah, that's an interesting thing. So this was your crock pot thing, right?
This is my crock pot thing. So I seared the thighs. I put them in the crock pot. I cut up this turkey sausage. As I said, it was a spicy Italian turkey sausage we had a couple of days before. Threw that in. Deglazed that pan with just a little bit of hot water and put that fond in the crock pot. I put in the remnants of all my half containers of stuff that was on the top shelf of the refrigerator. So there were black olives, there were green olives, there were little pichaline olives, there were sun-dried tomatoes, there were capers. I think that's it. Mm-hmm. I put a couple of onions sliced. I put a container of mushrooms, about three-quarters of a pound of mushrooms sliced, and a couple of sprigs of rosemary. And that was it. And I sealed it up and turned it on low. And 5 hours later, when we came back from the city, it was beautiful. It had beautiful broth. And I then, when it was now completed, I took the thighs out, which were beautifully, you know, perfectly done, falling off the bone, delicious. And I made a half pound of whole wheat egg noodles.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were done, I threw them into the crock pot in the sauce and the mushrooms and everything, and served them together. And it was just really delicious, so easy, really cheap. I mean, literally, it was like $8 for the thighs. And all the other stuff was just, you know, things I had left over in the fridge, mostly a couple of different assortments of olives. So there you have it. That was my turkey thigh braise that was delicious. And, you know, quick, cheap.
And I think that's a good point for, I'm 55 years old, almost 56, and I've been cooking since I was, late, 19. Uh-huh. And I've only just started using a crock pot this past year. So it's kind of fun. But I like what you said about one of the things I'm noticing is that I always kind of, it doesn't need the amount of liquid I think it does. To minimize the liquid, and this is almost like approaching the crock pot thing a little differently, to really minimize the liquid that you put in, and just letting the meat cook and release its juices and creating more. Like I tend to end up with a little bit too much sauce, which I'm always happy about because I freeze it, I use it for other things.
Right. When I do things in the crock pot, most times, because I do cook large quantities of food because I always want leftovers, whether it's for my in-laws or I pack it up for Uncle Joe or, as Mario and I love leftovers. So, we'll eat the same thing 3 nights in a row. Generally, I pack it and it's an oval one that has a locking lid, which I love. There's a rubber gasket around it.
Right. I have
it really seals in, the juices.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a pressure cooker in a way. And generally, if I have that thing fully packed, or even if I don't, generally the liquid is only about a quarter of the way up on whatever the solids are.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, think about, especially if you're using mushrooms or, every food is breaking down and releasing, unless you're making a soup, you really don't want it to be that juicy because it's going to end up with too much.
Well, I did something, I forgot to mention it to you a couple of weeks ago, and maybe this is a thing. I love when I do, I think I've discovered something and then I say it to someone and they're like, oh no, that's a thing. So maybe it's a thing. But I made a chicken cacciatore in the crock pot. Mm-hmm. And because I tend to have too much sauce, I wound up with a whole quart almost of leftover just the sauce.
Now,
some of the chicken, there might have been a little bit of chicken in that, but there were no bones. It was just really pretty much the sauce. In this case, it was with tomatoes, and I use white wine, garlic, onions, carrots, and mushrooms is what I did for this particular batch of cacciatore.
Yep.
So this is weeks later. I was going to do another cacciatore. Now I looked and I thought, oh man, I don't think I have any canned tomatoes, so maybe I can't do this. And then I went to the freezer and I thought, you know what? I'm just going to defrost this old cacciatore sauce.
Yeah.
And cook that.
Yeah.
So it was one of the best chicken cacciatores I've ever had because the sauce, it was like a fortified.
Exactly.
Almost like with chicken stock, a fried broth. Was really good. Is that a thing?
That's a thing. Yes.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course it is.
Well, think about a demi-glaze. So a demi-glaze is a stock that's been reduced and reduced and reduced and reduced. You know, just the flavors concentrate. And it's really funny you're saying that, because whenever I make chicken cacciatore, I purposefully make sure I have sauce left over because it's one of the things that Uncle Joe loves the most. So at this very moment, I probably have 2 quarts of cacciatore, just the sauce, in the freezer. Because I can very quickly just put, even frozen, I can put that block of frozen cacciatore sauce in the crock pot with a couple of more chicken breasts or a couple more chicken thighs, or usually a combination of both, and a few more mushrooms and a few more, and it makes a whole nother batch.
I'm telling you,
yeah.
I thought it was the most, I mean, the flavor, you know, is just so intense when you do it that way. And it's kind of a fun way to also use your leftovers, and just the idea that you're not, you know, we're not throwing anything away. Just if something is still good, you know, freeze it, use it, incorporate it. It's all good. Yeah. I haven't thrown away any food in a long time, and it feels really good.
Doesn't it feel good? I mean, I that's something that's drilled into your head at culinary school. You know, you don't waste anything, like nothing. Even the skins from onions go into a stock.
Absolutely.
Everything you cut off of a celery stalk, everything you cut off the end of a carrot,
strippings,
everything goes into a stock pot. So, you know, you don't waste anything.
Just briefly on stock. Because I'm constantly making vegetable stock now for my vegan clients, because, you know, makes sense. That's what they live on, is veggies. And so we always, there's a never ending supply of things. Now, I've always been under the impression that there's certain things that you cannot or should not put into a stock, including things like anything in the cabbage family.
Oh, well, disagree.
You know, because they're too strong. You disagree?
I
want you to disagree. Yeah. Saying that, because it does give a pretty significant flavor though when you put
it
in cabbage.
It absolutely does. And if you think back to remember I used to tell you about my grandmother's minestrone, basically cabbage is the base of it. Like that's the more predominant flavor.
But do you put cabbage in your chicken stock?
I do not generally a chicken stock. I would just put like a mirepoix. I really wouldn't put anything more than a
mirepoix. And so you're saying for cabbage, for a vegetable bait stock, absolutely put the cabbage in.
Absolutely.
And you know what? And now I'm feeling stupid because, yeah, of course.
I mean,
you want every vegetable in the vegetable stock.
Yeah. I mean, and I wouldn't put every vegetable. I would put every hard vegetable. Like I wouldn't put a cruciferous vegetable. I wouldn't put broccoli or cauliflower. I wouldn't put squash. If I did, you know, those flavors
are
so muted, and unless you're making like a potage or something where you want that pulp in there, you know, generally when you're making a stock, you're straining it. You're not using any of that fiber. You're not using any of the solids.
Right.
No, I definitely would put cabbage, and I also would put, you know, as I just said, like what most people are throwing out. I would put the carrot ends. I would put the celery leaves. I would put the...
Oh, sure. I do all of that. And then sometimes I'll take I will put in broccoli stems.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's certainly imparting flavor.
Right. And a cabbage, you know, a vegetable stock made with cabbage is going to have a much different flavor than a vegetable stock made without.
I don't know about much different. You will certainly taste, you know, you'll get the hints of the cabbage. I don't know that it would be, depending on how much you put also. Like if, you know, if that's the predominant vegetable you're putting in there, obviously that's the predominant flavor.
Right.
You're just reminding me back in the 80s when all these crazy women were on the cabbage soup diet?
Yeah.
Like just, you know, get a head of cabbage, throw it in a pot of water, and drink that broth, and miraculously, you are going to be shedding pounds.
Yeah, I thank God I probably made it once and I said to myself, you know, don't do that again. That was stupid. That was really stupid.
I mean, it was just basically a receptacle for, you know, people to drink more. Yes.
I mean, what I do, what I do now,
it's more about, you know, instead of reaching for that Coke, get a cup of cabbage water.
Yeah, it's about consuming more vegetables. I mean, yeah. I do my own weight loss, and for me, it's not weight loss. It's just trying to fight this unbelievable uphill battle of maintaining weight or, you know, not becoming hugely fat. But what I do every couple of weeks now is because now I'm getting all organic vegetables, which feels really good. Now I feel like I can overindulge. Sometimes when I would eat vegetables and I know that they're loaded with pesticides, it's like I don't want to eat a lot of them. And now I'm sort of like, now what I do is I take a bunch of vegetables. It's usually something like, it might be broccoli. I love when there's cauliflower in it. But I don't always use it. And any vegetables I have, not any starchy vegetables, no butternut squash or anything like that.
Right.
Mostly green vegetables, little bit of carrot. And I cook the soup. And I love using ginger and garlic. And I might put in cumin or something like that. Then I take all the vegetables out and puree them, put it back in the broth. And that's basically my lunch. Every That's day great. Is I just had that as zero fat. I don't do any fat. I don't pay anything. I just put it all in the pot, water, and it feels really good to eat
healthy.
That. And the flavors with the ginger and the garlic and the spice, you know, you don't have to go, don't do cabbage for goodness sake when you could have something, you know,
exactly.
Something else. But
that sounds delicious. So that's really good. You've been that's pretty much it. You're having that soup every day.
You would not believe what here's a typical day of what I eat.
Okay.
In the morning, I might have like 3 ounces of fish.
Mm-hmm. You've always done that. You've always had salmon in the morning.
Steamed. I mean, I'm very careful on the portion. Especially if it's salmon because it's fatty. But if it's something else, I might have like a flounder or something like that. I might have 5 or 6 ounces and I basically microwave it with crushed red pepper and salt and pepper. That's it. And that's my breakfast. Okay.
That sounds good
snack,
to me. I'm sure people are horrified, but that sounds delicious to me.
My snack at about 10 in the morning is 1 hard-boiled egg. My lunch is that soup that I just described.
Yeah.
And dinner, sometimes, like if I'm teaching a class, I try to have, and I might sneak in, if what I'm learning is if I'm teaching a class that day, and only if I'm teaching a class, I will have a few bites of carbs during the day. I find that even if I have them early in the day, it gets me through my class, because when you're doing this really strict dieting thing that I've been doing forever, you
need carbs.
You consume so little that at times I have bonked after class where you feel nauseous, like you're going to throw up.
Yeah, you need some energy.
So I'll have, like, even if it's just a quarter cup or something of either a little pasta or a couple bites of bread, I'll have that early in the day and it tends to get me through my class. Right. So sometimes right before, an hour before class, I might have a chicken drumstick. I might have another couple of ounces of sliced chicken breast, but that's it, Laura. That's it. And it's sometimes it's about 500 calories a day, you know. It's pretty intense. I don't do it every single day. Okay, for example, 2 days ago, I broke down. I was actually feeling sick because I had too much apple cider vinegar at one sitting. So I got to work and I was like, ugh, feeling nauseous. And so I did break down and I had a half of a bagel because one of the kids just didn't eat one of his bagel halves with cream cheese. Just ate it.
Yeah.
Then I had some pasta.
I think your body is trying to figure out what's going on because.
Well, but the other thing is that, you know, what I do, and I do this because there's some things I do in my life that are not good for you at all, as in the minimal amount of smoking that I do, but I have a couple, you know, two or three cigarettes a day. I drink wine every night. Part of the reason I do this is to sort of counteract the not so great things I do in my lifestyle. And so I'm putting in those calories that I'm putting in, they're all organic, pure, good stuff. And just like if I have yogurt, I just have a small amount. So we're running out of time, but when we come back, I have a major, major vegan breakthrough to share with our audience.
Sounds good. We'll be right back.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Are you over the age of 60 and been diagnosed with lung cancer? If so, you and your family may qualify for a cash award. We can help make sure that you and your family are financially safe and medical expenses are covered. If you've been diagnosed with lung cancer and are over 60, call 24/7 1-855-398-1754. 1-855-398-1754. Attorney Advertising. William Stephacker Jr. is the attorney responsible for this ad. Main office, Granton, Pennsylvania. May not be available in all states.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Generic Sildenafil allows you to save up to $650 on Viagra. Why pay name brand prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get the same results for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 50 generic Sildenafil pills for just $99. Call 800-590-0443. That's 800-590-0443. Again, 800-590-0443.
Non-attorney paid spokesperson. Could your house go into foreclosure? Are you behind on your mortgage payments? Does it seem like the bank has no interest in helping you save your home, and you feel like you have nowhere to turn for help? Then we have good news for you. Foreclosure Protection Services can help save your home as they specialize in foreclosure assistance. That's all they do. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, being threatened with foreclosure, have been denied a loan modification, or been the victim of a predatory loan, it's critical that you call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-846-3464. Their network of attorneys and their agents are available to speak to you now. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, Foreclosure Protection Services can help stop the foreclosure process. Call today before it's too late. New laws are in effect that may save your home. Call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-846-3464. 800-846-3464. That's 800-846-3464.
And welcome back to Food for Thought. You have a major breakthrough. A major vegan.
I do.
I wish we had one of those.
I have a major vegan breakthrough.
Breaking news. Deirdre has a breaking story.
There are lots of times when if I blow a client away with something, whether it's something I made up or something, whatever, there are times that you go, and you probably have experienced this too as a professional chef. There's times you go, yeah, it's all right.
Yeah. You know, people are raving.
Everybody else seems,
people are like, oh my God, it's the best thing. You're so fabulous. Right. That's the best thing I've ever eaten. And you're like,
I've ever had. And inside you're going, it was all right. You know, but, and then there are times, aren't there times when everybody's saying that and you're like, I know, right? Yeah. Like, shit.
I really nailed it. It was really good.
Yeah. Like, I know when to take credit for something, you know? So I had one of those moments.
Always should be taking credit someone's
hired. Oh, I'm polite. I don't, at a dinner party, I don't say, oh, it's all right. I say, thank you.
Yes,
you know.
Of course.
But, you know, we're very critical of our own work, but you have to learn to have grace and to, you know, you, it's going to be a big downer, Debbie Downer at a dinner party if you start putting down your food. So I never do that.
No, of course not.
But it was a vegan breakthrough. So my, I don't know why I, why did I even decide to make this rigotte? Uh-huh. I made a vegan rigotte.
Yum.
Now, I sometimes call it ricotta. Growing up, we called it rigotte because I lived in Brooklyn and my grandfather was Italian. Mm-hmm. But ricotta, let's go to ricotta since that's what people want to hear. I don't know why I decided to make this. I can't remember. But anyway, all of a sudden I realized that I could. And I thought, well, maybe my client will like this. I'll put it in like, oh, she mentioned, I was trying to get to her, like, what else can I make that I haven't done? And right. She said, you know, we would love to have some kind of baked pasta dish, you know, like a
ziti or a
ziti or, you know, just something like that. You'd bake in the oven and
go ahead, so, say it. Mac and cheese.
Mac and cheese, you know, they like that comfort food. So I said, okay. And then I started to think about ricotta, you know, maybe I could make a vegan. So I look in the vegan cookbook and there was a recipe for tofu ricotta and it called for a pound of tofu, a little bit of minced garlic, a little bit of olive oil. Uh-huh. I would suggest not using the extra virgin for this. I would use a more neutral olive oil.
Can I interrupt you? What yeah. kind of tofu? Like hard tofu, soft tofu?
Firm.
Semi-firm.
Okay. Or no, firm.
Okay.
Firm. And nutritional yeast, which is huge for vegan. It gives things a cheesy flavor.
Right.
Salt. And I think that's it. So what I came up against, okay, so I look in the fridge. I always have a ton of tofu, but we only had like 3/4 of a pound of one block. So it wasn't quite enough. The recipe called for a pound. So it might have right. even been just over a half. So what I did was I added, because I had it in the freezer, maybe about a half a cup was all I had left of cashew cream,
okay.
which for those who don't know, is just raw cashews that are soaked and then pureed. So it's very fine and it adds like a creaminess to and multiple dishes.
Mm-hmm.
So I added a half a cup of the cashew cream and a half of a wheel, and the wheels are about, I'm going to say, 5 inches in diameter of my, I think it's called Myokos. It's the vegan cheese. It's a vegan mozzarella.
Okay.
So I supplemented with my lack of tofu with those two things. And I'll tell you what, I'm not a big ricotta fan. I'm not drawn to it. The only time I really like it is if it's on a white pie and it's got mozzarella with it and right. garlic and and roasted broccoli or something like that. It's not, I don't want a stuffed shell. I don't.
I love it.
I know. A lot of people do. I just don't. I
love it as a dessert. I love it. I put cinnamon yeah. in it and sometimes a little bit of honey and cinnamon.
Yeah, I'm not like that, but I'll tell you what. So the following day, I did have, I have this ricotta, and I sauteed a whole bunch, maybe a half of a big tub of fresh spinach mm-hmm. and some artichoke hearts mm-hmm. and garlic uh-huh. and a little bit of olive oil. So I tossed I had like really fat rigatoni type the tubes.
Right.
And I tossed it, all of that stuff with the rigatoni. Then I made some seasoned breadcrumbs. So I took a whole bunch of breadcrumbs. I melted some vegan butter,
uh-huh.
Tossed it with that, with a little bit of minced garlic, not tons, salt and pepper and some dried thyme. Took mm-hmm. that, baked it in the oven just till it got toasted. Mm-hmm. And so then what they did was they baked it and then put on the little crumbs at the end of the baking process.
Right.
I came in the next day and she said, Deirdre, that was unbelievable. Like she actually was tasting it while I was cooking it. She was like, oh my God, I can't stop eating this.
So it's like mac and cheese basically. And so just do me a favor, go over again. So you had the tofu, you had a little bit of the cashew cream, you had the vegan mozzarella.
Yeah.
You had garlic, and you just all whip that up in the processor or?
With my hands. Just, oh, it so crumbles because the vegan mozzarella is not the consistency of real mozzarella. It's actually mushy.
Oh, okay.
So you're able to, it's not like if I were to use real fresh mozzarella, I would have had to put it in the Cuisinart because
right.
It's not going to break up.
So but this, you just mush this all together with
mush it all together. Just mush it all together with the nutritional yeast and the garlic and the tofu. I'm telling you, Laura, I had it. I didn't really have it until the next day. I took a portion that had not been baked yet, you know, because I had two. They had baked one.
Uh-huh.
And there was one that was not baked yet. And I just took a little bit of that out and I put it in the microwave. And then I put on the breadcrumbs. It was like unbelievably good.
And I'm assuming it was sort of replicating mac and cheese, like it was creamy.
Well,
and it was...
I mean, it wasn't mac and cheese. Like if you would put a ricotta in a with penne and marinara.
Okay.
You know, like a baked ziti.
So but it was creamier. It wasn't like, you know, bechamel-y.
No.
It wasn't thick.
It was like ricotta. It was, and they decided, like, I was going to mix in the tomato sauce. They said, no, just leave it out. We'll put it on the side. We'll dip our garlic bread in the tomato sauce.
Right.
And that was a good call because it was nice to have it just be the pure sort of red, no red in the pasta dish. So
that sounds delicious. So what did you call it? Cheesy?
I don't know.
Ricotta pasta or?
I guess that's not sexy. I have to think of a sexy name. I'll think of it.
Baked pasta with ricotta? Vegan ricotta?
Pasta a la Didi.
Are you giving it like a real name? I mean a descriptive, like.
No, I want to give it a real name because it's my dish. I discovered
it. Pasta a la Didi.
Anyway, it was very good. But the one thing that, you know, what kind of blows me away about, you know, I was thinking how good it is, and I thought, I wonder how it compares cost-wise to a quart of ricotta cheese.
Right.
I looked it up. Okay, tofu doesn't cost that much, right?
No.
Cashew cream. The cashew cream can get, they
cashews
get a little
expensive, right?
They are, but I mean, I use a very small amount, though. Mm-hmm. A half a wheel of that cheese. I think a wheel of that cheese is like $17. I'm not kidding.
Oh,
you
5 inch? You said
yes.
Wow. Okay,
it's
that's
one inch thick, and 5 inches in diameter, and I think it's about $17.
I'm thinking, I'm picturing like a 1 kilo brie. Is it about that size?
No, smaller, much smaller. 5 inches and round and 1 inch fat. So basically, if you're going to, you know, be vegan, be prepared to spend at least twice as much on your vegan cheese products. And the vegan cheese products are incredibly expensive. But I guess if you're not buying meat or fish, maybe you can afford to spend that kind of money.
Yeah, that's what you're right. That's what you're spending it on instead of the protein, you know, the, as you say, the meat, the fish probably comes out. It's probably equal.
Maybe. And I'm actually, my client is cool enough and she's in the industry. So she'll understand why, you know, I'm asking. I'm going to ask her what they spend on groceries because it would be interesting to me to see if, you know, for people who want to make this decision to go vegan, but, you know, can't afford it. Well, maybe you can. If you spend X amount of dollars on groceries doing this, you can afford to spend
a couple of times a week or seafood a couple of times a week.
Shrimp or any of that stuff. Maybe you can afford to spend $17 on a little wheel of cheese.
So are you not giving her a grocery list? Like she's just buying things. And
sometimes she just gets all her staples of the things they like. Mm-hmm. And then when she lets me know when they're doing an order, you know, cause they have it delivered from Whole Foods. So, you know,
do you have a conversation about what you they feel like eating this week that you're going to be cooking?
Oh yeah, sometimes. Okay. You know, when we sometimes it doesn't happen because they have, you know, meetings all day and I barely see them and they've done the grocery shopping without including me, but whenever right. she has time, we chat a little bit about, "Oh, what should we do this week?"
Right.
And so the next thing she wants me to do is some kind of tomato based sauce for pasta with eggplant, which will be kind of fun because I don't think I've ever done that, believe it or not.
Oh, yummy.
Like roasted eggplant and incorporating that in the sauce.
Yeah. Love that.
So, yeah. Love that.
I've had a sauce. I can't remember where it is. It might be, there's a really good Italian restaurant in Brooklyn called Noodle Pudding. And they have a pasta that has roasted eggplant in it that's delicious.
Is it tomato-based?
It's tomato-based, heavy garlic, cubes of eggplant.
Right.
I mean, if I were to replicate it, I probably would saute an onion. I'd put some garlic in. I'd let it cook for a bit. I would throw in the eggplant. I might put a little bit of water just to get the eggplant to start releasing its juices. I would let that simmer. I would throw some tomato product in there, some herbs in there. And that's pretty much it. That's the sauce with, you know, a ton of cheese on it. Yum.
I was thinking, that sounds really good. I was also thinking about cubing the eggplant and roasting it first. Mm-hmm. And then putting it in to get that like caramelization, that roasty flavor in there.
That would be good. I mean, you would have to just make sure you really roast it thoroughly so it breaks down and starts to get translucent. You know how
right.
roast eggplant, it can sometimes get fibrous and dry.
Right.
Or maybe I would roast it first and then put it into the sauce and let it break down even further with the tomato products and what other, you know, veg you want.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely let it,
yeah.
let it cook twice, you know, so it'll be thoroughly cooked in the roasting process.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah. So maybe just something super simple. So yeah, something to think about.
That sounds really good.
So the tiki masala, I think I talked about my tiki masala last week.
You did.
So just as a little reminder, so the tiki masala, I made it for my client with tempeh. But, oh, and I have for next week, Laura, I want to do a segment on probiotics. So just keep that in the back of your mind. But
okay.
I made it, the tiki masala, for myself with chicken. And so you saute, you know, ginger and garlic. And then, and I did dump this all. Actually, I didn't saute the ginger and garlic. What am I saying? It was a crock pot version. So I put in
right.
ginger and garlic, a can of tomatoes, a can of coconut milk,
yep.
Garam masala.
Yep.
And additionally, some ground, I believe it was ground ginger and... mustard. I can't remember. There was two other spices in addition to the garam masala. Dump it all in the crock pot. Okay. It was absolutely delicious. And I got the chicken legs on mm-hmm. sale.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there was about two, four, six. It was either 6 to 8 pieces, you know, with the thighs and the drumsticks.
Yeah.
The entire dish cost about, I think it was $7.
Yeah.
And it lit, you know, it had like at least 4 meals out of it.
Yeah, it's delicious. That's one of my, that has become one of my go-tos. And I had told you once before, you know, when I basically am making, instead of tiki masala, it's basically Merkani, which is, you know, it just has the addition of yogurt at the end as well.
Right. So that's right. That's what I forgot to mention.
In the beginning, you had your yogurt. Yep, I remember.
Yeah, I didn't. I left the yogurt out. I left the yogurt out, and I was planning on, because of what you said about the crock pot, I was planning on putting a dollops of yogurt on at the end. It didn't need it. You know,
right.
it was fine the way it was. Maybe next time I would do it like that. But go ahead.
Well, only because it just adds to the, you know, the creaminess of it, that umami, you know, it gets so creamy in there.
Right, and the sour of it.
Yes,
is a nice,
exactly.
is a nice compliment against the
exactly.
sweet of the tomato sauce and coconut milk.
Good, I'm glad that turned out well.
And cheap as hell.
So I just looked it up, and I remember now. The pasta is called pasta a la Norman, is the eggplant pasta.
Really? Okay.
Really delicious.
Is it a famous Italian restaurant? Like, can I look up what pasta a la Norman is?
Yes, you can. Okay. Yes, you can.
All right.
All righty, my friend. We are coming around the bend here. Next week, I'm sure we'll have some more interesting vegan dishes.
And we'll have a probiotic segment.
Oh, that's right. Whatever else we end up cooking this week, we'll talk about it next week.
Fermented foods.
All right. Talk to you then, everyone. Have a good week.
Thanks for listening.